Welcome to the Federalist Society Practice Group podcast. The following podcast, hosted by the Federalist Society's Litigation Practice Group, was recorded on Thursday, March 28, 2013, during a live telephone conference call held exclusively for Federalist Society members.
Welcome to the Federalist Society's Practice Group telephone conference call this morning on the case of Horn versus the United States Department of Agriculture. My name is David Ray. I'm here at the Federalist Society. As always, I want to point out that our call is a presentation by our experts and that all expressions of opinion are those of our experts, so they're not a reflection of the opinion of the Federalist Society. This call is also being recorded for use as a podcast in the future, and today we want to welcome Roger Marzulla. He is the one of the founding partners of Marzulla Law, and before that, he was, among other things, a former assistant attorney general for the Environment and Natural Resources. You were provided a more complete bio in today's announcement of the call, so I'll leave it at that, and I am going to hand it over now to Roger Marzulla.
Good afternoon to those of you on the East Coast. Good morning to those of you on the West Coast. The topic today is Horn versus Department of Agriculture, the third of the takings cases before the Supreme Court this year, and in my view, probably the one most likely to dramatically affect the interpretation of the Fifth Amendment's Just Compensation Clause. The case was argued before the Supreme Court last Wednesday. I attended that argument and am here to report on my impressions of that argument. First of all, let's talk about where the case came from. Mr. and Mrs. Horn are raisin farmers. Actually, I guess they raise grapes that they dry as raisins out in the Central Valley of California. Raisins, as well as other agricultural products such as almonds and walnuts and certain crops of oranges and so forth, are subject to a Depression-era program called the Marketing Order Program. The purpose of that program was to stabilize and boost prices for farmers who had a tendency to overproduce certain kinds of crops. What Congress decided to do was to set up a program under which the Department of Agriculture, from year to year, could determine just how much of that crop should reach the market, and thus, by controlling supply, also control the price that was being paid for that product. With respect to the years in question, 2003-2004, Mr. and Mrs. Horn were required by the Department of Agriculture to hand over to this program 30% of their raisin crop in the first year and 48% of their raisin crop in the second relevant year. Mr. and Mrs. Horn refused to hand over that portion of their raisin crop, stating it was a taking of their private property without just compensation in violation of the Fifth Amendment to the Constitution. The Agriculture Department slapped them with a penalty of about $700,000, which they appealed through, first of all, the administrative process at the Department of Agriculture. Then, when they lost there, challenged the penalty first in the district court in California, and ultimately in the Ninth Circuit. It is the decision of the Ninth Circuit affirming the Department of Agriculture's fine of the Horns that reached the Supreme Court and that will be decided by the end of this term. The Ninth Circuit actually made two decisions. The first decision of the Ninth Circuit was that the Fifth Amendment's guarantee of just compensation for property taken had not been violated because, in fact, the Horns had available to them the so-called Tucker Act remedy. That is, they had the ability to pay the $700,000 and file suit in the Court of Federal Claims to to recover back the property taken, in that instance, the $700,000, that constituted a just compensation right, and that the Constitution was accordingly not violated. The Horns sought rehearing of the determination by the panel of the Ninth Circuit, sought rehearing and rehearing en banc, at which point the United States government interposed a new objection, stating that in fact the Ninth Circuit and the District Court had had no jurisdiction over the case at all up to that point, because the taking claim could be asserted only and exclusively in the Court of Federal Claims under the Tucker Act jurisdiction of that court, that there was, in short, no ability of the Horns to assert the taking clause as a defense to the enforcement of the penalty in the Ninth Circuit. The Ninth Circuit accepted the government's newly discovered jurisdictional argument and, instead of holding against the Horns on the merits, dismissed the case for lack of jurisdiction. And that is the procedural posture in which this case came before the Supreme Court. Now, you might say, I thought we were here to talk about the Just Compensation Clause. Why are we talking procedure? The truth is that much of the litigation, both procedural and substantive, regarding the Fifth Amendment, particularly in claims against the federal government, over the last 20 years, has turned out to be procedural. And most of the cases lost by property owners have been lost on procedure. Procedure is an integral part of the litigation of Fifth Amendment cases, and the plaintiff who fails to consider the procedural aspects of his or her case generally runs the risk of losing the case without the court ever reaching the merits. Well, interestingly, on the procedural or jurisdictional issue, the federal government, when it got before the Supreme Court, took another look and said, you know, I think we were wrong again, so much to the surprise of the court and the litigants. The United States took the position that the case had been improperly dismissed for lack of jurisdiction, and that they would not strenuously resist a remand of the case. Now, the United States still claimed that the case could not have been litigated on the takings issue in the Ninth Circuit, but that this was a merits question, that in fact the Tucker Act constituted just compensation. Accordingly, there was no constitutional violation, and the Horns would lose. The questioning from the court was most interesting because it came from both the traditional conservative justices and the traditionally more liberal justices, and both seem skeptical of a system under which, as the government argued, the Horns would be required to pay the $700,000 fine, then sue in the Court of Federal Claims to get that very same money back. There was reference by both sides to the Apfel case, decided a few years ago by the Supreme Court, in which, writing for a plurality, Justice O'Connor indicated that where money was involved, there ought not be the necessity of going through this unnecessary procedure in which a plaintiff paid the money, then sued again in the Court of Federal Claims. Justice Scalia openly challenged the Solicitor General, who argued for that procedure, indicating that, in his view, he didn't see that Congress had in mind that each year the Department of Agriculture would take the Horns' raisins and each year the Horns would file a just compensation suit in the Court of Federal Claims to get paid for those raisins, or alternatively, that the Horns would pay a penalty and would file in the Court of Federal Claims to get that money back either. He called that a crazy interpretation of the statute. And at a later point, actually, Justice Kagan referred to this as perhaps the most outmoded statute on the books, if that's what it really meant. Justice Breyer opined that this seemed to him exactly the sort of case in which an individual ought to be able to raise the constitutionality question before a district court and have that issue decided. So there seemed to be some general agreement that the Ninth Circuit had been in error with respect to its jurisdictional determination that it couldn't consider the takings claim at all, and with respect to the need for remand of the case. So I think we can expect a remand. The question is how broad that remand is going to go and whether the court is going to reach the merits. And I'll put that word merits in quote here because the so-called merits issue in this case and in many such takings cases against the federal government is the issue of whether the right to file a lawsuit in the Court of Federal Claims for money damages, that is, for the value of the property taken, is in fact the sum, substance, and total of the right to just compensation guaranteed by the Constitution. The majority of states hold that the Fifth Amendment can be asserted as a defense to an enforcement action such as this, or as a challenge in a declaratory relief or injunctive sense to a state or local statute. But at the federal level, under a case decided probably 15, 18 years ago, called Preseault, P-R-E-S-E-A-U-L-T, against Interstate Commerce Commission, the Supreme Court decided that, as a general rule, Congress would generally prefer that its programs remain undisturbed, and that instead of invalidating the governmental action on the ground that it was an uncompensated taking, that the individual should instead be required to comply with this important program and just seek just compensation before the Court of Federal Claims. And it was that principle on which the government strongly relied in its defense in Horn. The justices, as I indicate, seemed quite skeptical of that rather roundabout procedure. And this is where procedure becomes substance and really becomes the vehicle for getting to the heart of the meaning of the just compensation takings clause. The court seemed to think that being able to file a lawsuit in the Court of Federal Claims, possibly costing significant sums and taking many years to litigate against a Justice Department that very vigorously litigates and defends these cases, was not just compensation as required by the Constitution. And if the Supreme Court goes beyond merely remanding this to the Ninth Circuit to determine merits, but in fact gives some direction, some hint that a Tucker Act remedy, the ability to file a lawsuit, is not the same as payment of compensation, which is what the Constitution says it guarantees, then it seems to me that we have not only thrown open the door to litigating federal takings cases in the district courts, but also to a new interpretation and broader interpretation of the Just Compensation Clause, which has not been available for many decades within the federal system. How the case is going to come out is anybody's guess. Beyond the fact that it's quite certain to be remanded. So we'll have to stay tuned, and perhaps by the end of June, early July, we will have a decision telling us whether, in fact, there is a new loss and perhaps a new weapon in the hands of property owners in dealing with takings by the federal government. That's kind of my summary, and I'd be happy to take questions at this point.
Well, Mr. Marzullo, we do thank you very much for that presentation, and so we will now move on to the Q&A portion of our program. In a moment, you're going to hear a prompt that will say the floor mode is on. After that, to request the floor, you'll need to enter star and then pound. Your microphone has now been turned on, and so you will have the floor when you hit star and then pound.
Hello, Roger.
Hello.
Hi, a question for you. You know, for a government program, you know, like the rates and regulations we have here, that seems to be predictable in that it is imposed potentially annually, but unpredictable in that the magnitude of the raisin crop or the fine, the magnitude of the raisin crop or the fine. I think this seems to present some curious questions of judicial efficiency for future takings claims. Because should any of this be identified as a taking, would future takings plaintiffs affected by such schemes be required to file takings claims over and over again to recoup just compensation, you know, potentially annually, or maybe even every 6 years at minimum?
Well,
is this an issue that has been, you know, raised in this case at all?
Well, in effect, that was exactly the question that Justice Scalia asked in response to the Solicitor General's argument that just compensation was provided by the Tucker Act because the Horns could hand over their raisins and then file a lawsuit in the Court of Federal Claims. Justice Scalia said, that's crazy. Surely Congress didn't have in mind that the Horns would be paid for the raisins at all, let alone that they would be paid for them via a lawsuit and that they would have to undertake the burden of that kind of a lawsuit in the Court of Federal Claims. I suppose if the Solicitor General had wished to respond to your question, he would have said there is a six-year statute of limitations, so you could bundle 6 years worth of takings and bring that claim every 6 years. It is also interesting that what the Solicitor General in fact indicated is that that's sort of the system as it's set up, and that probably once you got the Court of Federal Claims to hold that the marketing order process constituted a taking, that the Department of Agriculture would probably react and adjust things in some way. Whether they could statutorily simply stop taking a portion of the raisin farmer's crop is, I think, not clear. But that at least was the government's response, that once it was found to be a taking, that the government would sort of change its conduct. But your point is certainly an excellent one, and it's one that both Scalia and Breyer and Kagan, for that matter, I think all three, thought made very little sense, that requiring this kind of lawsuit every year or even bundling them every 6 years would not be a very satisfactory remedy, and it certainly would not be consistent with the guarantee that the framers intended in the Fifth Amendment's taking clause.
Thank you.
Okay, once again, in order to ask a question, you'll need to push the star button and then the pound button on your telephone keyboard. If there's anyone else that has a question, then this is, you go ahead and press the star and then the pound. And while we wait for that, I will make a couple of announcements. Next week, we have various Teleform calls scheduled starting on Monday, April 1st. The first event that we will have will be on copyright and commercialization after Kurtzing versus John Wiley and Sons. That will be on Monday at 12 noon, excuse me. Then on Tuesday, we'll have Prosecuting Financial Firms with Tim Flanagan and former SEC Commissioner Paul Atkins. And on Thursday, we'll have a very special program on Judge Bork and his life and his legacy. That presentation will be done by both Professor Stephen Calabrese, the chairman of the Federalist Society, and Judge Frank Easterbrook, our own Dean Reuter, moderating that program. I see we have another question.
Hi, Mr. Marzullo. My question, this case obviously involves a hopefully unique kind of government program. So to what extent is any decision by the Supreme Court going to be limited to this particular program or others like it?
Good question, and the answer is it depends on how broadly the court writes its opinion. First of all, there is a certain uniqueness, and in fact, there was a discussion about what was the property at issue here. Was the property the raisins, or was the property the monetary fine that had been imposed on the Horns for refusal to give over the raisins? Depending on how the court addresses that issue, there may be some ramifications for future litigation. There are certainly grounds on which money could be considered different from other property, since the remedy available, just compensation, is also money, and that gets us into this revolving wheel of paying the fine and then getting the money back. If, on the other hand, the court talks about the raisins and whether requiring a portion of the raisin crop is a taking, that is perhaps more limited in concept to the marketing order program. But the larger issue, I think, and the issue that is the one that interests me in this case, is the potential for a determination as to whether providing a suit in the Court of Federal Claims is the equivalent of just compensation. And that has broad implications for all programs. That is, if the Horns are able to challenge the Department of Agriculture's order in this case, then can't parties in many other contexts assert a taking clause defense or a claim of invalidity in district court with respect to other government programs, a remedy that's not available to them right now under existing Supreme Court precedent, particularly the Perseau case?
Again, anyone who wants to ask a question should hit star and the pound, and we will now go on to the next participant.
Yes, Mr. Marzullo, David Emerson, Berkeley, California. In addition to the other arguments that were made, was there any discussion about the, I guess I would classify this as a substantive due process issue, of the financial burden of placing on the aggrieved party here of having to float this large amount of money in the form of this fine until they receive compensation on a recurring basis, which is a non-trivial and burdensome amount?
Yeah, that's an excellent question, David. And that issue specifically did not arise, perhaps only because we had a very active court and none of the justices got to that question if it was on their list. I think it is an excellent point, and it's not only necessity of coming up with a significant amount of money like this and then waiting years to get it back, if ever, but of course the cost of litigating in the Court of Federal Claims, even though one does ultimately have a right to attorney's fees if one prevails in the Court of Federal Claims. It seems to me the difference, to put it in sort of simplistic terms, I think anybody would realize the difference between paying a debt and being subject to being sued to collect the amount of the debt. That they're two quite different things, as you point out, and that is why, in my view at least, the court took a wrong turn, and the Solicitor General is flat wrong, in suggesting that the right to sue the government is the same thing as just compensation, or that it is the extent of the just compensation right under the Fifth Amendment.
Again, anyone who has a question should hit star and pound. And while we wait for the next person to ask the question, Mr. Brazula, I guess, when all is said and done, what do you think the likelihood is that the court will try to find something on narrow grounds rather than open up those types of floodgates?
Given the way the court is polarized and the 4-4-1 balance and all that. By the way, it's a little hard to know where Kennedy is, and that's what everybody looks at, thinking that perhaps he's the only vote that counts. I think it's fairly likely that the court's going to look for narrow grounds, David, but I think that ultimately anything they say is going to have some reverberant qualities and is going to impact how the lower courts view this kind of litigation. And if, as I think is quite likely, they start allowing some kinds of assertion of takings clause defenses or declarations in the district court, that's going to be a dramatic change in the way the Fifth Amendment is interpreted. Right now, the Court of Federal Claims and the Federal Circuit, which is the Court of Appeals that hears the appeals from that court, is really the sole arbiter of takings claims from the against the United States. In fact, even claims made in district court are then appealed to the Federal Circuit. So you have a relatively small pool of judges writing all those opinions. If we had more district courts and maybe even more courts of appeal hearing these kinds of cases, I think we'd get a much broader palette and perhaps other thinking with respect to the meaning of the just compensation clause and how it ought properly be implemented by the courts as well as by the federal government itself, which, after all, is the entity that has the obligation to pay.
That brings up an interesting question, because if that were to occur, then perhaps the remedy for the government would be for Congress to go back to the drawing board. Is that not right?
Absolutely. That is, if one were able in the federal system to do what most states allow. Most states would allow a property owner to say, this system is unconstitutional because it takes my property and it doesn't pay me for it. That is simply not allowed as a matter of procedure in the federal system. If it is allowed, then I think property owners will find themselves in court challenging lots of federal programs under the Fifth Amendment, and in response, Congress is going to have to deal with those to the extent that they are invalidated as takings without just compensation.
Once again, we'll offer one more opportunity. Anyone who has a question should hit star and then the pound button. And it looks like we do have someone who wants to ask a question. So,
this is Bill Severson in Seattle, and just following up the discussion, it seemed, is the case likely to get resolved on sort of a adequacy of due process for the taking in terms of the nature of the remedy provided here? Is that a way for the court to narrow the issue and not have to address the just compensation issue and the larger floodgates problems?
Well, Bill, it's not really a due process case. It's important to note that the due process clause is separate from the takings clause in the Fifth Amendment, although the one follows the other. So it's not so much a question of can the plaintiff pay the fine and go to the Court of Federal Claims, because certainly he can. So he didn't say, I have no remedy at all, no way of vindicating this right. In fact, if he were able to say that, then ironically he would be allowed to litigate the takings claim in district court, because there would be no just compensation under the analysis that the court, the Ninth Circuit, adopted, that the right to file a lawsuit is just compensation. So the likelihood of the resolution, I think, would be, first of all, to say it is a merits issue whether the takings clause requires actual payment as compensation, or whether it only guarantees you a process, as the government asserts, by which you may be able to win a judgment for compensation. Will the court take that on and say a process is not the same as actually having the money in hand? I think that's going to be a much closer question, and like so many things, I think there may be a stalemate on the court with respect to that issue, so it'll be really hard to get them all together. So they drop back to the level of generality. We can all agree on a remand, because even the Solicitor General admits that there should be a remand to the Ninth Circuit. Let the Ninth Circuit decide whether a suit in the Court of Federal Claims is just compensation under the Fifth Amendment. And then we can take that case up on the merits. And that, in fact, is what Horn argued for here. That's what Horn wanted. Note that he was moving for rehearing, trying to get a final judgment, when the government popped up and said, oh, you know what, this is jurisdictional and you can't hear it at all. And the Ninth Circuit said, yeah, we think you're right, so we won't hear the case at all. So I think they go back to the Ninth Circuit, and it's most likely that the Ninth Circuit's going to get a shot at those merits. We know that they originally decided against the plaintiff, that in fact the Tucker Act remedy is just compensation, and that's all you get. You got to pay the fine and sue in the Court of Federal Claims, and that's all you're guaranteed by the Constitution. So if that happens a year or two from now, we may see Horn versus Department of Agriculture back before the Supreme Court again. Great question, Bill.
Thank you, Mr. Marzullo. Once again, anyone who has a question should hit star and then the pound sign. But if
yes, hi there. This is Jennifer Fry. I noticed that one of the amicus briefs that was filed in this case argued that the court should use this case as an opportunity to overturn the Williamson County doctrine. And the connection between the facts of this case and what you've been describing in Williamson County is not entirely clear to me. So I was wondering if, in your opinion, is there a connection? And if so, does this case, in fact, have implications for the future of the Williamson County doctrine?
Well, it could, Jennifer, and I think that's an excellent question. In fact, one of the justices did mention Williamson County in passing. The connection, as you point out, is not immediately obvious, but the connection is this. For those who don't know, Williamson County is one of the two or three cases that the Supreme Court decided back in the 1980s when it dodged the regulatory takings issue and instead held that the case just wasn't ripe, that the governmental action had not yet reached the point of finality such that the takings issue could be considered by the court. And so the argument in this case, Jennifer, was that until you have paid the fine, there is nothing that has been taken. If it's the fine, if it's the money, the $700,000 that you claim is the property taken, it's not taken until you've paid it over to the government. So your case is not ripe. That's the connection to Williamson County, and I think the point being made by the amicus in this case is that to the extent at least you're talking about money that you shouldn't require the plaintiff to pay over the sum as a condition of actually ripening the case and making it then appropriate for a court determination. Sort of the next step in the ripeness analysis is this this other point in which the Supreme Court in the Purceau case actually applied that as a ripeness doctrine and said if the federal government takes your property, you first have to sue in the Court of Federal Claims to get just compensation, and only if you are found not to have a remedy in that court is your claim ripe. So the court kind of used Williamson County and the ripeness doctrine as a means of forcing the plaintiff to go through this circuitous route and to be directed to the Court of Federal Claims. Does that?
Thank you. Yeah, that helps a lot. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
We now will move on to our next question.
Hi, I'm not sure about all the procedure that's involved here, but what happens if the fellow doesn't have the money to pay? Do they, you know, is a levy a taking? Do they do a lis pendens against the property? You know, when does the injury really occur? And again, what happens if the guy is near bankruptcy and cash flow doesn't permit him to pay? Thanks.
Yeah, you know, that is an excellent question, and what we're going to hear, this and the earlier question that we had about the onerous nature of requiring someone to pay and then sue, I think what it shows is that the Just Compensation Clause has been sort of the weak stepsister among constitutional protections and has not been protected as vigorously and robustly as have some of the other rights under the First Amendment and the Fourth and the Fifth and the Sixth and the Eighth and so forth. And that, in fact, going back to my early point, procedure has been a major way in which the government has avoided its constitutional obligation to pay just compensation. That is, the government drags these cases out. There are lots of plaintiffs who simply find themselves unable to bring takings cases, unable financially, unable in terms of the time and effort required to spend years in litigation in what, by the way, is very complex and tedious litigation with the government raising every potential defense and quite explicitly trying to drag things out until the plaintiff sort of gives up. Is there something unfair about that, given that what the Constitution seems to say is, fine, you can have my land, you can have my raisins, just pay me for them? That shouldn't there be an easier way of either getting that payment or saying, if you're not going to pay me for it, then don't take my raisins? And I think at bottom, that actually is the essence of the Horn case. And that's why I see this as an important case before the court this year to perhaps breathe some vitality into the Fifth Amendment by depriving the government of some of the procedural complexity that they put the plaintiffs through on the way to trying to get the just compensation that the Fifth Amendment says they're entitled to.
Again, anyone who has a question should press star and then the pound while we wait for the next question. I guess then, Mr. Marzullo, it does sound indeed as if though no matter what the outcome of the Horn case may be, this will probably find itself back in Congress's court.
Well, I think that's the other sort of interesting issue for the agricultural community. I quite frankly was surprised at the sort of universal view of the three or four justices who spoke to the point last week that this whole marketing order program seems, if not blatantly unconstitutional, at least rather outmoded and a pretty clunky way of supporting farmers' incomes. So I wouldn't be surprised to see this issue at some point, perhaps in reaction to a Supreme Court decision, being taken up by Congress, and that would certainly be of some significance to the farmers, and that's a huge segment of the economy in states like California and Florida, Texas, and so forth. So it is, I think, likely to reverberate, and it's entirely likely, I think, that Congress may end up in the near future revisiting some of these New Deal programs that have outlived their usefulness, as at least a couple of the justices seem to think.
We have another question.
Hello, Roger. I was just wondering, if takings cases were able to be litigated in the district courts, do you see that as beneficial for the property owners to have the multiple options, or do you think it would just become more complicated?
Wow. There's probably not a single answer to that question. There have been actually suggestions. And I think maybe even bills have been introduced once or twice that would grant joint jurisdiction to district courts and to the Court of Federal Claims over these takings cases. And that's in large part because there's a fair amount of frustration about the jurisdictional restrictions on the Court of Federal Claims, the geographic problem that the court is located here in Washington, D.C., even though the cases may be located all across the country and so forth. If the plaintiff had the option of going to the Court of Federal Claims or going to the district court, I think that would certainly be a benefit to the property owner. It would be a calculus. He or she would have to make the determination, as litigants always do, about which court they want to go to, and it may depend on what circuit they're in and so forth. But I should think that the ability to challenge a regulatory program on takings grounds which is denied plaintiffs right now, would certainly be a benefit to at least some property owners, a benefit they don't have now, and certainly to the extent they can't afford to go to Court of Federal Claims and can't afford to wait years, maybe can't afford to ante up the $700,000 and then sue to get it back, I think that would be beneficial to those owners, and I think they'd be in favor of it.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
At the moment, I don't see if there's anyone else who has a question. We'll give one more opportunity. Anyone who has a question should press star and the pound button. Seeing as there are no further questions, on behalf of the Federalist Society, I want to thank our expert, Roger Marzullo, today. And I also want to thank our audience. We welcome your feedback by email, and you can send your email feedback to nfip@fed-soc.org. Please feel free to join us next Monday for our next teleforum. And until then, I wish everyone on the call a happy Easter, and we will stand adjourned.
Thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed this Practice Group podcast. For materials related to this podcast and other Federalist Society multimedia, please visit the Federalist Society's website at federalistsociety.org/multimedia.